one of you came up with a wonderful idea. No, not one of you, because the idea was that she couldn't be here. So I'm recording the review session, and I'll put that on the web too. How about that? That had never come up before. I'd never thought about it, and that's because this is the first semester that we've done this course, so it wasn't an option. I mean, recorded this course. So I can't imagine sitting down and listening to 3 or 4 hours of review sessions, but what the heck? Some of you don't have a life, right? You just listen to review sessions and recordings. Your nightmares are going to be fun tonight, huh? Julie was just reminding me that she is now in her 30th year, and she's a lot closer to all of those terrible things. And she was complaining this week about not being able to exercise and not getting enough sleep and not having a social life. And so if you have some waves of empathy, would you direct them to the old woman in the front row? Right, good question. We haven't talked about the theorists, and if I recall correctly, none of those theorists actually say anything about physical development directly. Everything in this unit will be about biological development, and I'm not expecting you to discuss the particular theorists. We'll get into the theorists in the next 2 units, and then you'll need to review those, and I'll remind you of that. The next unit will talk a lot about Piaget, and in the 3rd unit, a lot about Erickson particularly, and a couple of theorists who aren't listed there. But I'm not, I don't emphasize the early part of the text. It sort of gives you an overview and what some of the issues are, but given how much we have to cover, I don't expect you to know that stuff. And Julie's responsible to make sure that I don't ask. She's on your side. Yeah, how much did I say about menopause when I was talking about ova? Remember the discussion of how many ova you had and none at menopause? I think I didn't say very much about why menopause happens, but that decline in the number of ova available to be recruited and being recruited declines, so estrogen declines. Beginning in your mid to late 30s, but I won't ask a specific question about that because I didn't talk about it, so I won't go beyond what's in the text about menopause. I missed a point. When I was talking about puberty, sometimes I skip to the other end of the childbearing years and talk about the hypothalamus and the pituitary losing their synchrony and that contributing to premenopausal symptoms. But I didn't say that, so it won't be on the exam, Julie. Yes? You.
Is this text just going to be on what we discussed in class, or is it also going to be that with the book?
Everything in the reading and the website and the lectures is fair game. Bummer. Uh, 50 multiple choice and 4 essays to write out of 6 given. And you'll have half a page to write, so practice writing small. For each essay, not total.
What would you give for a definition on illustration of differentiation?
What would I give for an illustration of differentiation? There are a couple of choices. One is to talk about the structural differentiation in the prenatal period, for example, starting with arm buds, and then the various parts of the arm developing as differentiated structures, and then finally being integrated into a single system. So you could talk about that. You could talk about the any of the organs starting off as a single type of cell and then branching out to other kinds of cells and eventually being integrated into a functioning system. It's important in any illustration of differentiation and integration to start with the undifferentiated state. So you start with an arm, for example, the arm bud is not differentiated, and then it gets distinct from the other parts of the arm. So you can talk about physical structures. Another way to illustrate it is to look at function. So you can look at the use of the arm after birth. The kid has the fully formed arm, but its function is not developed yet. So the kid moves it fairly randomly and moves it in all at once. And then gradually gains control over individual parts of it. So it's differentiating the pieces of the arm, the segments of the arm and the hand and the fingers, to gain specific control over each of those. And then as the child gains specific control, it's able to integrate that into a very flexible and complex system of movements that allow it to do almost anything. Yes. So that kind of example would be where I would go with it, because they're the easiest to explain. You could start with where the text defines differentiation and integration, and they define it too narrowly, and that's on the website, that, and I think I mentioned it in class, that the text, the only place the text talks about differentiation and integration is talking about nerve cells, neurons, and it uses the example of nerve cells being produced and then differentiating in function and integrating so that they work together. But that's not the only place. It's the only place in the text where differentiation and integration are mentioned. But it's a general principle across all aspects of development. We'll talk about it again in language and thinking, relationships later on. But if you wanted to do the brain piece, you have the cells being generated, and they're all, for a particular part of the brain, they're all pretty much the same, and then they move to different places and become differentiated by place, and then those structures within the brain begin to act together and get coordinated, so they're integrated into a brain that works as a single organ with many, many complex functions. Let me correct that. If the impression I gave was that you didn't need to know the vocabulary, what I meant, what I hoped I was saying, and hope and reality are sometimes different, was that I won't ask you specific questions that are just vocabulary. I assume that you have the vocabulary, so you will need it to answer the questions. But I won't ask a question which of the following is a definition of differentiation? I won't do that. I might ask which is an example of differentiation, but I won't ask definitional questions of that sort. So I do assume that you know the vocabulary and that when you read it, it makes sense to you. And then the questions will go from there. But I wouldn't ask you to define or give you embryo is, those are too simple. You're beyond that. Yes. I'm sorry, you started off strongly and then I couldn't hear you.
Biological development being speeded up or slowed down.
Can you speed up or slow down biological development? Great question. What do you think?
Well, I felt that the genes were responsible for making the enzymes to control what the cells are doing, but if somebody, somebody could get sped up maybe by certain enzymes or hormones, they got it.
Okay. So the suggestion is that you might be able to speed up the processes by hormonal action, and that would be an example. One of the examples could be interpreted that way. I talked about briefly about altitude affecting growth. So you could slow down physical growth by placing a person at high altitude, moving to Denver instead of Boston. So there are ways to change the environment or chemically to slow down or speed up some of the basic processes. It's an interesting question, and one of the things I should say and haven't is that when you look at the study questions, I've gathered those over the years, and as I said in the syllabus, many of them don't have answers in the text. Beyond that, many of them don't have answers or not clear ones. You can write books about some of them, and I don't expect you to be able to answer them in great detail, but they do focus you on specific aspects of the text that might be important to look at. The fun thing for me is that when I teach advanced child development or when I teach a graduate course, I can use the same questions, but people read books about some of them. That particular one is a very difficult question. Speeding up motor development, if you have the opportunity and you have the encouragement. The implication of the water skier example is that you can develop skills at least more quickly than other people do without the experience. So you can have transactions with the environment that lead to the development of the skill, lead to the differentiation and integration of the skill earlier than it would happen without the transactions. That's a fairly nice example. And that's the level that I would expect you to be able to answer it, that since biological development is, and motor development particularly, is based on transactions with the environment that you're in, if those transactions are rich and you have lots of opportunity and encouragement, then you're going to develop the ability to deal with that environment or the skills more quickly. And if you're tied down in your crib and can't get out and nobody ever holds you and turns you over, your motor development is going to be delayed.
I had a question about how changes in the brain are related to motor learning.
How are changes in the brain related to motor learning? OK. you. That goes back to Esther Talen's work that is described briefly in the text and that I described a little bit in one class. Let me give a two-part answer to that. One is a general comment, which is that when I ask how something is related to something else, if I ask how A is related to B, there are two questions in that. One of them is, how does A connect to B? And then flip the question around to ask how B is related to A. One of the biases that I said I had at the beginning of the course is that I have a transactional perspective. A transactional perspective says that most relationships are bidirectional. And one of the biggest problems that people have with the essays is that I'm looking to Julie because she knows this one well, is that I'll ask about how two things are related and get half the answer. So somebody will tell me that A causes B, but that doesn't tell me necessarily what might be happening in the other direction. And so whenever you encounter a question, an essay particularly in this course, think about it as probably a bidirectional question. Think about it in both directions. And there are questions, I think, on every exam, at least last year, which is Julie's experience with me. I think we had questions on every exam that encouraged an answer that was bidirectional, transactional, and many people didn't think about it that way. Let me spin a minute. I'm playing. We can change the wording of some of those questions so that instead of asking how A is related to B, would it help if I asked how are A and B related to each other? I think that's a subtle difference, but I think if you read that, how are A and B related to each other, would you be more likely to think transactionally? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That's why I teach, because I get all these ideas from you. The second piece of, not the answer to your question, but the second piece to that is conveyed by that notion that the way you ask a question shapes what kind of answer you're going to get. And part of the challenge in teaching and in taking the exams, it's a dual challenge, transactional challenge that we have, is to be able to use language in a way that conveys what you really want to convey. And often we don't do that. That comment comes from the fact that I've been trying for a year or so to write an article about the language that we use to describe development and its shortcomings, the shortcomings of the language, and that just became a couple of paragraphs in that article. So thank you. Okay, the second part of the answer is, I don't know, what were we talking about?
Brain.
I'm sorry, brain and motor development. Okay, so how are brain development and motor development related to each other. That was why I went in the direction that I did. Remember the illustration that I had about exercise or activity leading to the creation of cell assemblies in the brain. And as circuits get solidified in the brain, then they make new actions possible. And as you exercise those new actions, you create more complex structures in the brain. As you create the more complex structures in the brain, you make it possible to engage in more complex motor activity. So that's a dynamic system that spirals. So those two are affecting each other constantly. So the brain is responding to the activity, and as the brain becomes more structured or organized, then activity becomes more complex. As you engage in that activity, then the brain becomes more complex. So they are clearly an example of a transaction. I'm sorry.
The sheet you gave us about prenatal development.
Yes.
Are we going to have to memorize what each day or week?
No. On the prenatal development chart, what I'm interested in is that you have a general idea of the course of prenatal development. But I would never ask a question like, "At what point is the palate complete?" or "When does the heart beat?" That's why you have the list. Keep your textbook forever, and they'll both be out of date someday. But I don't ask questions that are that picky, or I try not to. What you do need to know about that is, for example, the difference between the different phases. I think I said this on Monday, that the difference between the germinal phase and the embryonic phase and the fetal phase is important. And that's covered in the text, but it's also important because I had said that the embryonic phase particularly is when new things are being differentiated. So you're generating new parts during the embryonic phase, and then the fetal period is the completion and elaboration of those and their integration. And I had also said, does anybody remember one of the important distinctions between the embryonic and fetal period? Take a chance. Okay, all of the organs have been started. They're not necessarily working. And why is that important? Okay, they're responding. The distinction that's really important is that when things are first forming, when they're changing, like being started, they are most susceptible to damage or to influence. So if you're trying to create a liver and you're just starting that process and you get an infection that halts the differentiation or the generation of cells, then you may not have a liver, and that's fatal. Later, after you've started the liver, you could have the same problem, but you would end up with some liver. And so the damage would not be as great. And so the one of the primary distinctions between the embryonic and the fetal period is that during the embryonic period, because things are just starting, they are highly susceptible to damaging influences. And during the fetal period, the same influences have less damaging effects, typically.
Do you know the reflexes that our first
The specific reflexes like the morrow and... No. No. I mean, they're fun if you do, but I wouldn't ask which of the following demonstrates the Babinski reflex or the Babkin. Sneeze reflex is fun. Sneeze reflex is the one that's generated by bright light. Walk out in the sun, you sneeze. Some of us do. We still do. The Babinski and the Babkin, and you don't need to know those. What is important is that all of the reflexes that you're going to have at birth are present in the last month or so before birth. And it's important to know that what they mean is that the nervous system and the musculature are connected. And that's why we test reflexes with a newborn. We want to know that all the wiring is in place and that the systems are operating. And if they're not, then we begin to look for what the problem is. But we test for the reflexes to see if the wiring is in place, and because if the wiring's not in place, then the kid is not going to engage in the activity that is going to lead to the development of more complex and highly developed behaviors. Because all of that development motorically and your social relationships to a degree are based on the reflex actions that the newborn has. If you don't root, if your system isn't wired to turn toward your whatever is touching your cheek, then you're less likely to eat effectively. If you don't have a sucking reflex whenever something goes in your mouth, then you're going to be a problem, because we need to feed you and it helps if you suck. So those reflexes are important because they're ways that the infant transacts with the world. There was a question here. I think it disappeared. Did I scare it away?
No, I just wanted you to repeat the relationship, especially with infant development.
Between brain development and motor, that was the... It's the... Again, it's a nice example of here's the brain and it's doing its thing when the infant before birth, actually. And what the infant can do is a reflection of the brain development, but as the infant does, as it engages in activity, then the brain becomes more organized. And as the brain becomes more organized, then it can do, the infant can do more. So it's a spiral that goes up. I forgot to mention the protocol, which is whenever you need to go, go. Don't worry about it. Just don't make a lot of noise when you go. But you're not a captive audience. You can leave whenever you have to. And I won't notice. And I won't take it personally. And when I'm the only one left, I'll stop. Okay. Question? Sure, I don't know. Flip a coin. An example of an essay question. Yes, and I was reminded today that I'm going to put some of those on the website. Example of an essay question. Let's see, which ones do we not want to use this year? We haven't made up the exam yet, so... Beach Boys song, right? Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Julie. I don't have any with me from previous exam. Now, don't give them the ones that you're going to propose. Okay. Let me. You want the flavor, right? You don't want specific one. You want the flavor. describe the, and these are going to be crudely worded, and we try to be more careful than this, but what does an infant have to do when it gets born? Or another version of that that I have used in the past is, how does life change when you're born? Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, most of us get born as babies. Not when you get born again. We could do that question too, but not in this unit. Let's see. Give and explain an example of the difference, the processes of differentiation and integration in the biological sphere. We actually are likely to ask that one, just because we always do. I'm not promising. I'm sorry. Yeah, give an example and explain it. Of the processes of differentiation or the relationship between differentiation and integration. Briefly explain the relationship between genes and experience. Genes spelled G-E-N-E-S. You know, sometimes your genes do direct experience, but okay, is that enough? So that's the kind of level, and again, you get half a page on each one, so we're not looking for a master's thesis on it.
So are mostly essay questions related to relationship between two things? Is that like a general
theory? Ooh, I told you students were getting smarter. The question was, are most of the essay questions about relationships between two things? I don't know, but it's a fascinating question. The examples I just gave are, you were counting, I'm going to have to go back and look. I really don't know. But if they are, that says something about the way my mind works. I don't think it is. I know, these two people here are laughing about the idea that I have a mind that works, but this is their third course with me, so it's okay. They can laugh. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer, but if you're going to be talking about development, it's likely that you're going to be talking about how two or more things are related to each other. If you're going to understand processes like development, you're going to be talking about how one thing influences another. So that may be a general intellectual statement that in order to understand something, you're going to be talking about relationships. I just never thought about it that way. I like that. Thank you.
I was just wondering what the grade worth of the essays compared to the multiple choice, like how much do you put points towards?
Okay, good question. The tradition has been, and we haven't confirmed it, because we haven't talked about it. Exam's not till Monday. What do we need to worry about? The multiple choice items are worth a point each, and the essays are typically 7 or 8 potentially each, which if you add up 4 times 7 or 8 comes up to 20 or 21 or 23 potential. Nobody ever gets 7 or 8. If the maximum is 8, then if you get 5 or 6, you're happy, because that's the way we work. So what that means is that a third of the points, or a little less, would be on the essays, and two-thirds on the multiple choice. Four essays times 7 or 8 is 21 to 28. Oh, it's after 5:30. My brain stopped working. I'm sorry. Thank you. Yeah, so something like somewhere between a third and 45% are on the essay, and the rest are on the multiple choice. Good. See, you can make simple mistakes, and it's okay. Life goes on. Question? Yes. I'm not sure what the question is. Where is it?
It's on his website.
Yeah.
It's not on the website.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It has nothing to do with WebCT. I refuse to knuckle under to that obnoxious system. I've done it, but I. Some. How many of you are taking WebCT courses? You love them? Okay. I simply have my own website on the university dime, and I put everything on there. And the address is on the syllabus. Yes?
If the writing activity
that we did, the way you influence the activity, is that going to be on the website? Okay, the question, I think, is would I use the same writing exercise on the exam that we did for the three-pointer? In some form, it might show up. And that's a logical connection because the writing exercises are always about what happened in lecture that day. And if it occurs to me that it's important enough to ask about it, then it's likely still important when we make up the exam. But it might be in some form or other, it might be modified, it might be incorporated in some other essay, or it might be reflected in a couple of multiple choice questions. What were the kind of answers we were looking for? I am reminded that our usual routine has been for Julie to tell you her reactions to the writing exams at the beginning of the next lecture, the writing exercises, I mean. And we forgot. So, whose fault is that? Okay. We didn't do it in five? Okay. Okay. We have in previous years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Your predecessor did. Okay. I apologize for that. Our intent is to give you feedback on those writing exercises each time. So what we were looking for this time was practically anything, and that's for any of the writing exercises, as long as it comes more or less from the lecture or the associated reading, if people have done that before the lecture. Almost anything that, for that particular one, anything that made the connection between activity and some aspect of development. And there are too many of those to go through all of them, but what we're doing is giving you an opportunity to practice writing in your own words some of those basic some of the basic content from the lecture. Probably the most were kind of lifted from the overhead on at birth the baby continues its activity and that activity. There was an overhead that listed 7 or 8 consequences of the activity that the baby engages in. And I think most of them, or a lot of them, reflected that. Some, I have no idea where they came from. but those were the ones we were looking for. And then points for anything that was reasonably connected to development. So we're not terribly discriminating on those exercises. And I think looking at it, I mean, the potential scores were 0, 1, 2, or 3, depending on a rough assessment of whether each... It asked for 3, I think, ways that activity was related to development. So for each, you got a point if it was in the ballpark. And I think most people did that. There were 2s and probably some 1s. And no 0s. Okay. Right, no 0s. So if you were here, you got at least that 1 point. If you did it.
Okay. I'm just having a hard time narrowing it down to the question, what changes are included in biological development? Do you mean like the transition thing?
Okay. Can I broaden that question a little bit?
Yeah.
No, if you're having trouble narrowing it down, I shouldn't broaden it, right? But I am going to broaden it. The question is, what is included in biological development? And it's essentially everything physical, either in structure or function, from conception to recycling. What you should know is the major transitions, why things change, how they change, so I should be able to just latch on to any particular transition like birth, and you should be able to think about what life was like before birth and what life is like after and how that transition takes place. Similarly for puberty. Biologically, what's going on before puberty? How does puberty happen, and then how is life different as a result of puberty? Or menopause or... And then generally, what are the factors or the influences on physical development or physical skill or physical status? And that's what a lot of today was about. You know, things decline, but you can hasten that. Ooh, you can speed up that decline, or you can slow it down. And you should know some of the major things that help us decline and some of the things that you could do to keep from declining. Okay. Yes?
Two questions. Do we have to know some of the diseases and such that, or after the birthing process,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Not mental. We won't be talking about psychiatric disorders at all. To the extent that the text talks about disease processes, you should have some sense of those. Yeah, knowing the specific genetic disorders, no. You should sort of have a intuitive sense. I wouldn't ask you to make a list, but an intuitive sense of what sorts of things are clearly genetic, which ones of those might be single genes and which ones are chromosomal and include lots of genes, because the text talks about that, but I won't focus on that in any detail. And then you ought to know which things are the result of lifestyle or germs or, you know, but that's you probably know all that stuff anyway. But I wouldn't ask you to talk about what causes sickle cell anemia. It's kind of an interesting disorder because it affects African Americans more than others in this culture, and can be a problem. On the other hand, did the text talk about what the adaptation for sickle cell anemia, it's actually a genetic adaptation. Sickle cell anemia gives you increased resistance to malaria. So it's one of those, oh dear, it's a trade-off. But if your ancestors come from areas where malaria is common, the fact that you have sickle cell anemia it means that your ancestors survived malaria better than the other people. So I guess it's an advantage if you want to go back and live in a place that has malaria. But it's a fascinating disease, but it's not crucial here.
Sure. I'm a little unclear about premature birth.
Uh-huh.
What exactly causes them? Does it have to do with the fetus specifically or the mother's body or yeah. Situation?
That would be relatively new content, but let me... The question is, what causes premature delivery, premature birth? And that has probably as many causes as anything else. It can be... any number of problems that the mother brings to the pregnancy. It can be problems with the fetus. It can be caused by stress, malnutrition, illness, injury. There's all kinds of causes. That too is fascinating. But it gives you an illustration of the complexity of the process of gestation, of pregnancy, and the process of birth. Yeah, I could go on in other ways with that, but I won't, because it would be new. Tired and hungry? Okay. So take a nap, get something to eat, breathe deeply, enjoy the warm weather. And I'll see some of you Friday and maybe Sunday and all of you on Monday.